Oh, I got a lot to say after this weekend, and you guys can react to the overreactions. John, the first, Indiana will beat Ohio State. Hoosiers 8-0 for the first time since 1967. Who have they played? They win by two scores or more every single week, and they did it with a backup. Meanwhile, Ohio State was struggling with Nebraska, left some throws on the table. I am not overly impressed with the Buckeyes, and the Hoosiers are capable.
I think it's a bit of an overreaction. Their quarterback was out. I believe he's still going to be out.
Could be back by Ohio State.
Might be back by Ohio State. But you ask, who have they beaten? I mean, what impresses you the most? Beating FIU, Western Illinois, UCLA, Charlotte, Maryland. I might be minorly impressive. Northwestern. They didn't play a team with a winning record until they beat Nebraska.
And what was the score of that game?
It was 56-7.
Right. And then the very next week with a backup quarterback, they win by two scores against Washington.
Right. But I'm pumping the brakes on the Indiana bandwagon.
Where's this game at?
Columbus.
It's in Columbus.
Where the last game was, where Nebraska took them to the brink.
Sometimes you have a necessary close win where you get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
A la Michigan 2022 against Illinois at home, where I still think people don't realize just how lucky Michigan got that day to win that game.
Yeah.
Ohio State gets it rolling this week. Penn State.
Yeah.
They roll it all the way to the Big Ten championship where they get the rematch with Oregon. So this is an overreaction. Not that I'm not buying Indiana. This is more about me thinking Ohio State's going to get right now.
Right. It's not about buying Indiana. Indiana is a damn good team.
Do you think they're a playoff team?
No.
Interesting.
Depends on
if they're 11-1. The only loss is to Ohio State, where they go right to the wire with them.
What if the same applies for Penn State,
though? Right. Well, that's
who's better? They don't play.
Right. To Greg's point, no divisions really hurt some of those head-to-heads. All right. Right. Oklahoma football will be left behind. They've lost three straight games, and it's not exactly to SEC powerhouses. We're talking South Carolina and Ole Miss. They're in the deep end of the water now. Kind of like Nebraska. They don't have access to those elite recruiting pipelines, and they will be lost in the aftermath of conference expansion.
I think it's a little bit of an overreaction. I know they're in a flyover state, and we thought Nebraska is going to be completely left behind. I don't think Nebraska right now, are they on the upper tier of Big Ten football teams? No, but they've got two things going for them. Brand and whether it's alumni base or following, they have the ability to spend NIL money.
Not an overreaction. I knew this was going to happen, and Oklahoma's the first one, and there's going to be others. And I think what Jim's saying here is, best case scenario, most seasons, 8-4.
Yeah.
That's your best year, and you might find that one special season where you go 9-3. That's being left behind. This is a national title contender in the old world, just like Nebraska was.
Yep.
Teams are going to get lost in a shuffle.
The following teams are eliminated from the playoff. Missouri, Illinois, and Navy.
So, Illinois. Two losses. Yeah, they're eliminated. Missouri. Does Missouri have two losses
two,
as well?
And they're both ugly losses. Yeah. Texas A&M, and then they were shut out against Alabama 34-0 this weekend. They're done.
I think so as well. Who's the third team?
Navy. They had to go undefeated. Yeah. They lost to Notre Dame, and it was an ugly game.
I think they're all out.
Side note, I think there are as many as 23 teams still alive right now, give or take. Previously, we would have had, like, I don't know, 6 to 8. More teams in the mix this time of year going to November.
Oh, and it's the parity in college football.
Yeah, not an overreaction. I think they're all done. And the only one I would maybe entertain is Navy, but they lost so bad. A lot of people saw it because it was a showcase noon game. They're all done. Surprisingly jacked
Chris Illich. The New York Jets are at the lowest point in the history of their franchise. They lost to the soft Patriots in the eyes of Gerard Mayo, a soft football team. The Jets are now 2-6. They blew three timeouts in the first quarter of that loss. This is with the Hall of Fame quarterback and his hand-picked weapons. They've tried everything. They've lost control of their franchise, handing it to a washed-up egomaniac, the lowest point in Jets football history.
They used three timeouts in the first 10 plays of the game. They are in absolute disarray. I don't know if you've seen the breakdown of the timeouts. It was epic. And yeah, I think this has to be because of the level of talent that they do have.
It's an overreaction because I am aware of the Rich Kotite era.
So, beyond that, how much talent did they have?
Right. But I mean, any Jets fan, I think, out there would admit that I would think they would say still the Rich Kotite era was the most embarrassing era. But this is right there. It's the next one. And I turned on this game yesterday because the Lions game was over. And there were other great finishes going on. Green Bay and Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Houston, Indy. Baltimore, Cleveland. And I chose to watch the train wreck because I'm enjoying this so much more, so much because I despise Aaron Rodgers. He's getting what he deserves, and I can't get enough of it.
2 years ago, Jets fans, Jets front office, they're probably all thinking, let's get sized up for Super Bowl rings because we have Aaron Rodgers coming. And then on top of that, they've got one of the best defenses because Robert Saleh, say whatever you want about a head coach, and I think he got a raw deal, is a great defensive coordinator. They fire him, and now all of a sudden, they have gone in the complete opposite direction from what Woody thought that they would do.
The Hail Mary will cost the Bears a playoff spot. Look, they're in the toughest division in football. There's probably another three or four losses baked in conservatively. The Commanders, another team that could be in the wild card, that's a tiebreaker, that's a deal breaker kind of thing.
I think it probably will. I think they'll be the last in the division. And we talk about the toughest division in football. And to me, it clearly is. I just don't see a world in today's day and age where if you're not the division winner, obviously you get the auto bid, that three other teams from the division actually make it in. I just don't think it's possible.
I don't believe they've played a division game yet. It will cost them. I really do think that this is the type of game that's going to make them 9-8 instead of 10-7, and you're going to get caught into a mix of having to win maybe some sort of, you know, tiebreaker on the seventh seed in the NFC. And yeah. I think the Rams are coming. I think the Rams have survived their bad part of the season. And you got the Seahawks, the Cardinals are 4-4, the Niners are 4-4. They're going to get lost in the shuffle because they're going to lose these divisional games because they're young and inexperienced.
So how about this? In 3 weeks, they play their first division opponent. They host the Packers, then they play the Vikings, then they play in Detroit, then they play in San Francisco, then they play at Minnesota, they play Detroit, Seattle, and Green Bay to finish up the season. Ooh. They're not making the playoffs.
The NFC South race is over. The Falcons have won both head-to-head games. Cousins is looking comfortable. The Bucs are without their top two receivers. The Falcons will win that division.
Because, I mean, they're in it with Tampa Bay. I think they're going to be good enough. I mean, it's the worst division in football. I think they're going to be good enough to be better than Tampa because Tampa's going to be receiverless for another, 5 weeks?
Not an overreaction. I think this is the fourth time I've said that, and I almost did, except I think the Buckeyes are going to turn it on with that first one. These are very good today. Did I write these? It's over because of the head.
Take credit.
It's over because of the head-to-head. I think that's the deal breaker here, is that at best, maybe Tampa gets Evans back later, you know, gets the defense fixed a little bit. But to overcome head-to-head, that's a two-game lead.
Tom said I got to spice it up a little more. None of these are bold enough.
No, these are great.
Oh, yeah, these are good.
This next one is Tua, while back, the Dolphins season is over.
Yeah, they're 2-5. They're done. Toast.
They weren't that good with him. Now they're three games back of the Bills in the win column. Cold weather is coming, and we know what that means for the Miami Dolphins. It means more losing.
Oh, yeah. Winter is coming. I don't think it's an overreaction.
So they do get their game in Buffalo this week.
Yes.
And
it's only supposed to be 60 degrees.
Yeah, so they don't have to go there, but they do have to go to Green Bay on Thanksgiving. I think it's an overreaction.
Cleveland late in the year, too. Cold weather.
I know. And speaking of them, maybe the Dolphins are this year's Browns. That team that kind of got left for dead. Remember the Browns last year, how awful they were? They went 11-5.
Yeah. Flacco.
I'm not going to give up on them yet. They're too explosive offensively. There's too many garbage teams in this league that they can outscore. I think they can get back in the race.
Done.
The Eagles will get the 2 seed in the NFC. The offense is rolling without the turnovers. Nobody else from the East, West, or South is better than Philadelphia.
Not an overreaction. I really don't think so. I mean, a bit of an overreaction. I think it's going to depend on Washington or Philly. And if they can find a way to beat Washington and they're down a game right now, I'm not ready to actually say that this is going to happen, that they're going to be a 2 seed.
Yeah, I'm going to say overreaction for now. And in my heart, I believe the Eagles are probably the second best team in the NFC.
Yep.
But I got to see them play one game against the Commanders first before I want to say that it's not an overreaction.
There you have it. Overreact, Jim's weekend overreactions. It's 97.1.
I get asked about my weight all the time. And as a player, everybody wanted to know, how much do you weigh? And because you're a big dude. Now they see the stark contrast between what I look like now and what I look like even just a couple of years ago. But especially when I played, I've lost over 70 pounds in the last 2.5 years. I've been able to keep it off, and I've done it because of the assistance and the help of Ideal You. They're going to assign you a weight loss coach. They're going to teach you and coach you throughout the entire process of what to eat and drink to lose weight. And then once you reach your goal, they're there to support you because they want you to keep the weight off. If you want to change your life too, go to idealyou.us right now and schedule your free consultation. You could be 20, 30, or even 40 pounds lighter in just 40 days. As I mentioned, I was down 10 in 10 days, so you get that instant reward. IdealU has helped thousands of people. They can help you as well. If you want to weigh less, go to idealyou.us.
Yards untouched, 52 points for the Lions, and as a ticket texter puts it, another blowout by classless Dan Campbell.
Yes. I know. Yes.
What does Chris Christie think today?
Oh my goodness. Can you imagine the outrage in the Christie household?
The Lions did everything in that game, capitalizing in the red zone, but getting a million chances in the red zone because of special teams, because of defense, takeaways, all of it, and Detroit avoided a letdown.
How dare they let their running back throw a touchdown?
Classless.
But, I mean, maybe on the flip side, Christie was thinking, all right, well, maybe what they did to us wasn't as bad. We could have been the Titans.
David Montgomery, former high school quarterback,
yeah,
showing off the arm a little bit there. Mm-hmm. Ben Johnson said after the Cowboy game, the well is deep. Because people said, you're giving away all your good trick plays. And his response is, I got more than I know what to do with, essentially. One trick play is going to set up another trick play because now they think this is the trick, but it's not. Ben Johnson is several steps ahead and everybody else is being victimized by the creativity. I love watching it.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's especially this time of year, all those tricks, a lot of treats.
Dan Campbell, post game, addressing the team. Here's what he had to say.
I love the post game from Dan Campbell in the locker room. It's so much fun. How about the energy of Dave Phipp? That's a typical special teams coach. All right. Always just chirping.
And Khalif, he's a guy we got to interview out in training camp. And I was really impressed with him. And not just the player he is, the person he is. And you can tell that they love him. And he had a huge game against the team he used to play
Monster.
For. He gets a game ball. All right. Let's get to Heather with the news.
Well, it is almost that time of year again where we have to turn our clocks back, of course, and prepare for those darker afternoons. So daylight savings time ends on 2 a.m. on Sunday, and experts say that falling back is actually easier than springing forward.
I think we would all agree.
Yes, but you still may need to prepare yourself. Every year there's the same story in how you prepare for this time change. Experts say that it may take a while to kind of adjust our sleep habits, our sleep schedule. Also find time to work out now that it's getting darker earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just kind of run out of that daylight, especially if you work a typical 9-to-5 job. You might be leaving when it's dark out already. So if you...
Especially if you're an outdoor workout individual,
yes,
you might actually need to find a place to work out inside or take some time during the day to get that workout in.
Yeah, and they say if you suffer from like seasonal depression, this time of year is much more difficult for your mental health. So to prepare, you can start right now. You need to adjust your bedtime little by little, experts say, before the lead up to the big time change, like going to bed about 15 minutes earlier. Just slowly start to go to bed a little bit earlier. Make sure you get outside when you can. Get some sunlight because that's going to help too. That natural sunlight is going to help like our body's internal clock regulate properly. So that's basically the two major tips is adjusting your sleep schedule and making sure you're still getting some of that natural sunlight. And then maybe one day we'll be done with all of this. We'll see.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the sunlight, especially in the winter months where you might not actually see the sun for 3 or 4 weeks at a time, you're going to have to, if you see it, take a little time, soak it in.
Yeah, there are two states, Arizona and Hawaii, that don't change their time. They stay on standard time. So
they got to figure it out.
Lucky little devils. Yes. More than 145,000 Michigan residents cast their ballot on the first day of statewide early in-person voting. That was on Saturday. This number exceeded expectations of state and local of election officials. So at voting sites, people were saying, hey, we got out early because we wanted to avoid lines and we wanted to avoid stress on actual election day. Some said they anticipated being out of town. Yeah. On election day, and they wanted to vote in person.
Sure.
And others were just like excited to get out and vote. So there's still time. Early voting does continue daily, including Sundays through November 3rd. If you want to get out early, you can go do that. They say as of 7 a.m. on Sunday, 22.7% of Michigan's more than 7.25 million active registered voters have already returned their ballots. That does include absentee ballots as well. Yep, pretty cool. Get out there, guys. Listen to this. An Indiana University football fan just ruined his chances at winning $100,000 because he tore his ACL while he was warming up for Pat McAfee's kicking contest.
I did.
It's painful. And it's one of those two where it's cringy and you're kind of laughing at the same time, but you don't want to laugh at another individual's pain.
No, this student, Jake, he was kind of like warming up, showing off for the crowd a little bit. And he did this massive kick, right? A fake kick, just warming up. And then he slipped backwards onto the grass, his leg bent underneath his body, ultimately blew out his knee. He had to be taken to the hospital. And then they did call.
That's why Charlie Brown gets so mad at Lucy.
Because
he's worried about blowing out his ACL.
Heather doesn't appreciate that.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Heather, this is Charlie Brown, Lucy. She holds the football.
She pulls it out.
On him.
He takes a swing and then falls on his back.
Why would I know this?
I know how you feel about Charlie Brown.
Human being.
I don't watch Charlie Brown.
Yeah, but even if you don't, it's kind of one of those, like, you just know that Lucy pulls the ball.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing.
No, I didn't know that. Sorry, guys. I really have no idea. So there was an alternate contestant that was selected, and he had the chance to win money not only for himself, but also for poor Jake, right? Well, kicked the ball, missed the field goal, got a second chance, missed the field goal again. So nobody won the money. Bummer.
Womp, womp.
JetBlue is being sued for serving an ice cream sandwich that was too cold.
Oh, come on.
And when I mean too cold, okay, well, listen to what happened, okay? So this woman, she's from New Jersey, and she was flying to Paris in August with her fiance, and she was offered this ice cream sandwich from the airline as a snack option.
Mm-hmm.
She said, oh, sounds amazing. I'll take that. Took the ice cream sandwich and immediately went in for a bite, but she didn't realize that it was frozen solid. So it wasn't just too cold. It was literally frozen.
She was holding it in her hand, wasn't she?
She was. She broke a tooth. It cracked like down to the root. She had to have it pulled by a dentist as soon as she landed. She had to get an implant later on. Whole hassle, right? And she says that the ice cream sandwich was like a block of ice and that the flight attendant should have warned her. And now she is suing for damages plus pain and suffering. And there's going to be a jury trial that's going to decide if she deserves any money and how much she should get.
Oh, come on.
I mean, I don't know what's worse, the suing McDonald's because your coffee was too hot or
ice cream's too cold.
Ice cream's too cold.
Yes. It's going to be hard to find a jury of her peers, though. It's a low bar.
That's Heather with the news. Coming up next, we have yet to talk about what happened on Saturday night. Michigan takes down Michigan State. And after the game, Colston Loveland with a reset, dropping little brother. Your reaction next, John. Everybody else, we'll get to it. 97.1.
We got a lot of great sporting events here in the Detroit area. Some fun that we're having with our teams. Why not watch it? One of the greatest places to watch all the sports. That's Stadium Swim, and it's located at Circa Resort and Casino. You can hang out next to one of the six pools, even jump in if you want, on three different levels for a perfect view. The massive 40-foot-tall high-definition screen at Stadium Swim. It's America's favorite place to watch all these great events. Swim-up bars. They also have Insta-ready selfie walls for you youngsters and one nonstop football party. Score your perfect game day spot with cozy day beds, private cabanas, or grab a lounge at the center of the action. You can reserve your spot today. It's 365 days of sports, and it's all poolside. Located at Zirka Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas, and it's right there on Fremont Street. Stadium Swim, all sports, all seasons. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
And the Wolverines win the rivalry clash. Paul Bunyan stays in Ann Arbor. Doug Karsh on the call. John Jansen standing right next to him.
Mm-hmm. In the background.
Creative. Michigan played two quarterbacks. And for once, I actually felt like the game plan played to their strengths. They had creative play calls. They avoided turnovers and penalties. And it was a clean game. And then afterwards, it was anything but clean. John, I want to know where you stand on all of it.
On the game?
Wherever you want to go.
Well, let's start there. It was a relief that the game was over, for a relief for us that Michigan won. And I do like the two-quarterback system, and I like it because it worked. That's simply it. I don't like having two quarterbacks, and we went through that. I'm not going to rehash that whole argument and conversation, but if you don't have any, then try and get one in the aggregate. Which I kind of believe they did. I think the big problem that I had with that process was at the end of the game, they ultimately got first downs with Alex Orji, but on first down with, 2 minutes left, and the timeouts that Michigan State had, you knew you had to get two first downs. They get one with Alex Orji, and then they go behind the offensive line that struggled mightily against a very good defensive front for Michigan State. And then they ultimately try it on third down, pick up the first. I don't know why we don't get there sooner in play calling, but I'm just glad they eventually got there. That's the one gripe that I have.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, Michigan State outgained Michigan on the ground, which is typically the calling card for this rivalry, but Michigan State squandered a missed field goal chip shot early. They had the fumble before the half. I thought Jonathan Smith didn't realize he had Aiden Childs at quarterback. He kind of coached as though he didn't have a quarterback with a lot of conservative decisions. I thought Sherrone outcoached Jonathan Smith. And there was a lot of heat on Sherrone coming out of the bye and a lot of praise for Jonathan Smith coming out of the bye. Sherrone's team played cleaner. And in a game where we knew it could be sloppy, Michigan was the cleaner football team.
And what was the one stat that I told you was going to decide the game? And it ultimately did. It's the turnover battle. And it was one turnover, even though it was only one.
Directly led to 3 points.
It led to 3 points. And here's what it did going into halftime. Michigan mounts a drive, and they score. At which, I don't know how they did it, but they finally did it. And then all of a sudden, you have a missed PAT. And all the energy that and momentum that you created, it was like, hey, okay, we're starting to fill up the balloon, and then it was... It all went away.
Well, MSU jumped them early, right? It was like 93 rushing yards to one. They had marched down the field. Statement, toughness, we're coming into Ann Arbor. And the problem is the drive ended empty.
Oh, I'll give you a stat.
And they should have and could have been up so many more points.
So they missed the field goal, right? Yeah. And that was holy cow, I can't believe he missed a field goal. He's a very good field goal kicker. So he misses it. And then they mount another drive. They go down and score a touchdown. At one point, Michigan State had 8 first downs. And Michigan had only run 7 plays total offensively. And even at the end of the game, I mean, the time of possession was still almost 2-1. It was 37 minutes for Michigan State versus 20, almost 23 for Michigan. It was completely lopsided. But it was the turnover that came after that missed field goal that allowed them the opportunity to go out there and take the lead going into halftime. And if you asked anybody at the end of the first half, just watching it, who do you think should be leading at this time? Your answer wasn't going to be Michigan.
No, and I think there's probably Spartan fans out there that feel like they got one that got away right there. That was a golden opportunity in sure. year one for Jonathan Smith to take the state and the rivalry and get Michigan while they're down. And they didn't. And it's a credit to Michigan with the Sharks circling all week, right? This idea of this team's poorly coached and they can't pick a quarterback and they don't do anything right. And while I don't think it was their finest hour, I think they did what they had to do to win the football game, which is a compliment to coaching. I also thought it was a compliment to coaching that Sherrone Moore denounced the nonsense after the game. Didn't feed into the fire right. of, you know, what took place. And John, I want your interpretation of it. Obviously, people saw Colston Loveland afterwards drop the little bro. What did you make of both the physical altercation and the fact that we're doing the little bro thing again?
I hate the little bro comment. I hated it when Mike Hart did it. I think Mike Hart has actually come out since then and said it's, you know, it was a mistake.
He regrets it.
Yeah. Because that's when you completely change the tenor of the rivalry. And before that, I mean, yes, there's anger, there's hate, there's all this. But now it's become, there's a matter of violence in this, and it's not the 3.5 hours that they play. Yeah, there's always going to be a shot after the whatever. Whistle, or there's a hit out of bounds. All right, but this all happens in every football game. It's just amplified because it's a rivalry. But it's the stuff that goes on before the first kick, and it's the stuff that goes on after the final whistle that annoys you. Now, I will say this, and I know I'm sure everybody's going to get all up in arms. The victory formation. I've never been in a game where somebody fires off in victory formation on the defense. And does it require a reaction like Colston Loveland had where he gets in the face
of the headbutt?
Okay, headbutt, sure. He stuck his face in his face. It wasn't a, I'm going to hit you with my head and recoil. It was, I'm going to stick my face mask in your face mask and jaw a little bit, which we see after almost every NFL play.
Sure.
But we don't have to get into who instigated what, because you fire off on victory formation. All right. To me, that was a little bro move. But then you can also be the bigger team and say, hey, scoreboard, we won, and walk away. And you don't have to then escalate it a little bit more, which then escalates it a little bit more. And then all of a sudden we have a melee after a really good, clean game on both sides. Yeah. And I thought it was a credit to Jonathan Smith it was a credit to him on how he coached that team. How he had them ready to play in a rivalry game, and you could say outcoach, not outcoach. This isn't part of that conversation.
Sure.
Sherrone Moore, I thought he did a tremendous job of getting his guys ready to play in a rivalry game, because there's not two great teams playing.
No, there weren't. Okay, the little bro thing to me is cringy. Okay, now I'm as a Michigan fan to hear that from you to say like it's kind of played out. You kind of cringe at it and bristle at it. The rivalry has been intensely competitive. Like, I think it's 10-10 in the last 20 years. I think it's 6-4 the last 10 years now. My point is, it's gone back and forth. It's fairly competitive, this rivalry. The idea that...
Well, the last 10 years leading up to the game, you said it was 5-5.
5-5. Yeah, now Michigan takes the edge, which is what happens in a rivalry. It ebbs and flows. But the idea that Michigan, with the little bro comment, it's not accurate. The series is competitive,
right?
And I think to me
it's disrespectful. It's a level of disrespect that I don't like, and it's disrespectful to the game of football, to the rivalry. I don't like it, and I do like the fact that Colston afterwards addressed, I shouldn't have said that. Now, it doesn't change it. He said it in the moment, especially after what happened after the final play, but I do like the fact that he tried to retract it later.
This was Colston Loveland. People have seen it, but Colston Loveland on the field after the game. So the confines of the game, I know you don't like it, but firing out while there's seconds on the clock doesn't feel like a little bro move to me.
Okay, well, I'll ask you this. Go look at any victory formation
over
the last 20 years.
Greg Schiano's teams were famous for it. We're going to play you until the final whistle. okay. tough SOB football, right? And it's a rivalry.
In my time at Michigan, in my 11 years of playing on the field in the NFL, in a victory formation, never had anybody fire off. Never.
But even if you do, okay, you can understand it. Hey, we got to hold our water, get the knee down, end the game, and be done
sure.
with it. And I'm okay. There's a little hand fighting, jockeying that takes place there. The headbutt in and of itself, no one should be suspended over it. But he did. He did put his head in.
Sure.
And he initiated physical contact. To Sharon's credit, he says, we don't need to be doing that stuff.
Right.
There's no fanning of the flames.
We don't.
You don't need to be doing that stuff. And then what is going on in the scrum after is hard to tell. I'll put it that it's hard to tell.
But it doesn't look good.
I see Khalil Mullings in a compromising position. I can't definitively say he stomped on someone. I can say it doesn't look good. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
I agree.
Don't put yourself in these positions because you don't like that they engaged on the kneel down. Like, you won. Go celebrate with Paulie B. He's back. He stays in your locker room.
Did you just call him Paulie B?
Paulie B. That's yours. Celebrate it.
Paulie B.
248-539-9797.
We going full initials on him? Yeah, let's go. Hey, PB.
We got a JP.
Yes, we do. Still not a nickname.
It's not. Okay, we want your reaction. First of all, little brother, is it played out or do you like it? Do you think that is very much still the dynamic and tenor of this rivalry? Do you worry at all about a D'Antonio 2.0, Jonathan Smith using it to tap into some extra energy for this rivalry? And of course, reactions to the game. It's 97.1.
Founders Brewing Company has been making high quality beers right here in the great state of Michigan for over 25 years with a focus on using the highest quality ingredients. You can always count on Founders to deliver extraordinary quality in everything they release. With that focus on quality, they set out to create a beer that lets you have it all. And it's right in the name. It's All Day IPA. Here's what you get. It's a refreshing and deliciously flavorful beer. It's easy drinking and high quality. All Day IPA is an IPA that is naturally brewed with an array of malts, grains, and hops, creating a delicious citrusy taste and a clean finish. It's the perfect beer for anyone looking to make the ordinary extraordinary and the good times great. And speaking of great times, heck, we got them all fall. We're going to have them all winter. It's All Day IPA is the perfect beer for anyone on game days, whether you're at home, you're at a tailgate, or in the stadium. It's available there as well. I know it is in the big house. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find All Day IPA. All Day IPA, it's all in the taste. Founders Brewing Company, Grand Rapids, Michigan. For 21 years old or older, please drink responsibly.
At Sharon Moore after the game, the tone is good. The headbutt thing, I'll go back to that. I don't think MSU headbutted Michigan. Colston
no.
Loveland headbutted a Spartan.
Yeah, but
I appreciate
the
tone.
On the snap, as soon as defensive end comes off, it could have been hands to the face. He swipes and hits Colston Loveland right across the face.
While there's time on the clock, he fired off. They engaged. Right. They jockeyed.
From a guy that's never played the game, sure.
John, and then they separate. They disengage. They are separated. The game is over. Colston initiates physical contact. I don't think that's
Agreed.
Disputed.
No, it's not.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying Colston okay. should be suspended for the headbutt, but he initiated the physical contact that led to the scrum. And then in the scrum, I see a lot of stuff I don't like seeing. I can't definitively tell you Mullings was stomping someone, but if we have footage of him doing that, he should be suspended. Or anybody that stomped somebody. We know the precedent in this rivalry. And look, we have to get the Washington prosecutor involved, but I do think right. if someone is stomping someone on the ground after the game, we know what that should be.
Yeah, and I'd like to know who was under there.
Right, I can't see, so I can't yeah. say. You know, I can't tell you.
I can't imagine it was a Wolverine.
Right, he shouldn't be stomping his own teammates.
So my feeling on the little brother comment is it's alive and well within the Michigan program, that feeling. You had a current player use it. It's been 17 years since Mike Hart said it. He said he regretted it, but it's alive, and it's never left the program. That's what they think of Michigan State, and they pull it out when in moments like that.
I think Winovich used it too since Mike Hart.
And
it's been used before.
People can think it's dead or put yeah. it aside or it's gone away.
It was
away.
As much fun as the revenge tour
but it's, that he also coined.
Right.
It still exists. I mean, see, that's the thing. Loveland, okay, he said he shouldn't have said it, but he said it. And he said it in the heat of the moment. And usually you get the truth when you're in the heat of the moment.
Oh, I don't think there's a doubt that that is a belief that some Wolverines have. I mean, we hear it still. But I think it's kind of played out. It's not like a slur. You can say it. I just think you look silly because the rivalry's been back and forth. It doesn't, You won. Gloat. I have no issue with that. It just feels kind of cringy that we're still doing little bro resets, especially when the guy who originally said it goes, my bad, shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
248-539-9797. Let's get to the phones, and then we've got a bunch of ticket texts, as you can imagine. Jason in Royal Oak, you're on 97.1.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm in a unique position to comment because I am a 44-year-old junior on the campus at the University of Michigan. I retired from the Navy in 2022. I'm on the GI Bill. So it's a very interesting perspective that I have. And I think it's important to keep in mind that in spite of national television contracts, the national attention, and now, unfortunately, the money involved, these are still kids. And so there's going to be some impulses there. There's going to be some juvenile behavior. Walking around last week on campus, the little brother comments, they were everywhere. There were signs in dormitory halls and whatnot. Little brother this, little brother that. There were rallies and whatnot. These are still kids. The vast majority of them aren't old enough to have voted in a presidential election. And so because of that, it becomes incumbent upon the coaching staffs on both sides to knock that nonsense off. They are grown men. Yes, barely, but they're still impulsive, and they still get up for this rivalry because it is a great rivalry. The little brother thing, it is, in fact, played out. You guys have mentioned the series is relatively even over the last decade. So now it becomes incumbent upon the coaching staffs to recognize that these are still young men, and they need guidance and leadership. And that's really the sum total of it. These are still kids, despite the money and the national attention. They need to be treated like kids from time to time.
Jason,
have a great day, guys.
Hey, but first of all, hey, thank you for your service.
Yeah,
Thank you. And good luck on the pursuit of your degree. I'm curious. Not only this week, have you seen your perspective of being a 44-year-old student has to be unbelievable. What are Friday nights and Saturday night like for you on campus?
Okay, well, I don't have a social life on campus. I have a wife, and I have, you know, a water heater that needs repaired and lawn care that needs to be taken care of.
That's amazing.
That is great. Got bills to pay. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, exactly.
Did they make you stay on campus in the dorm as a freshman?
No, not at all. I was fortunate enough to, I'm a homeowner, guys. They're like, okay, you can go.
All right, fair enough. Hey, Jason, it's good perspective. Yeah. Appreciate it. And I do think I don't know that I'd call them kids, but I understand his point that they are immature.
Yeah.
A lot of college students.
Well, and what do we say? Okay, take away the end of the game. They always get the one that reacts, right? So if you're going to react to somebody firing off the ball in that situation, which they have the right to do.
Sure.
Time on the clock, they have the right. I'm not saying they don't have the right to do it. It's just a rare occasion that it happens.
Agreed.
But they always get the guy that retaliates. And Colson was the one that retaliated. He didn't have to.
Ticket texters. John, you literally said we need to not do the little bro thing anymore, then immediately said MSU firing off the ball is a little bro move. Explain. A couple people hitting you with that, John. It says right after you said it, why go back to that lazy phrase?
Because it is. That's the move. I mean, if you want
time on the clock, you fire off. You don't have to like it. Just block. And then it's over, and then you go celebrate.
Yeah. And they should have.
Yeah.
There's no question they should have.
Ticket texter says, love you, John, but that was the most clear headbutt ever. Don't downplay it. Call it what it was. It's not getting in his face. It was a legitimate headbutt. Just, we can move on. He says, moving on. Another one says, it will never end. Sore losers threw a tantrum and started the fight. That was not a headbutt, nerd. So now we're debating whether it was a headbutt this morning. His head butt into someone else's head. Was it as aggressive as he could have? No, I'm sure he could have been more violent. He's Colson Loveland. If he wanted to, he could have done more damage, but it clearly was a headbutt.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's disputable to me anyway. Lil Bro is too much. Come on. That's a soft take. Sign of the times. You can say whatever you want. No one's saying this is like a banned word.
No.
It's just, I think it's played out.
And it is played out, but it's never going to go away because it is a part of the history of that rivalry now.
And they know it gets under Spartan fans' skin. So it's part of why they do it. Like it's why it's instinctive. It's why fans do it to each other because they know they're going to get a rise out of their friend or their neighbor. It's not just that we won. It's that you're our little brother. And they know that that gets under Spartan fans' skin. And then they know Spartan fans are going to react a certain way. How dare you? So that's why it keeps happening. I don't think it's appropriate, like, because of the state of the rivalry. One team not much better than the other, but it's going to continue forever. I have no doubt of that. We've got calls to get to. 248-539-9797. We'll also work in Lions football in the 8 o'clock hour. Huge win. I know it's a one-win team, but to go out and put up 50?
Yeah.
No letdown for this football team. We've got Lions plus TJ Lang as the show rolls on. It's 97.1.